Hi, I'm Mark Milicevic and welcome to Governance Bites. Today it's my pleasure to spend time with Kirsty Campbell. Kirsty is a professional director. She's on half a dozen different boards, has experience in not-for-profit boards as well as for-profit boards, and is an expert in risk and those sorts of areas as well. So a fantastic person to speak to. Thank you very much for your time, Kirsty.
Pleasure to be here.
Great to see you again as well. Now, can I start with your experience that you've had in a not-for-profit and a for-profit in for-profit entities as well? What is the difference in governance?
I think the principles are the same, Mark. So the underlying principles of governance and why we think good governance important don't change. But you have to be somewhat pragmatic about the constraints within most not-for-profit entities. They don't tend to have very deep pockets or endless resources.
Right.
And so there are always compromises that have to be made. And so, given those constraints, your expectations around what good looks like have to adjust. So if you're in a large corporate organization with a long track record of governance, your expectations are going to be pretty high. And whilst the principles are going to be the same, you're going to expect to see rules, frameworks, oversight. You expect to see some pretty good practices going on. Whereas in not-for-profits, you're going to have to take a view a bit more, and you're also going to have to work out other ways of seeking assurance and comfort that the principles are being followed.
Yes.
So you might not always be able to afford PwC to come in and do a very expensive third-party review or audit. So how else can you check?
Yes. Right?
How else can you get the oversight and how else can you verify that what you're being told is true? And that's when you might need to lean in a bit more. We talk about noses in, fingers out, but you might actually have to put your fingers in a little bit and look and ask more questions, meet more people, just satisfy yourself that things are being done in the right way for the right reasons.
So the process of governance itself, the concept of governance, what you're trying to achieve is the same, but given your reliance heavily on volunteers and your lack of deep pockets to spend on resources, quite often the board will become what I've heard Kevin McCaffrey call a resource-based board, where they'll actually get their hands dirty and do a little bit of the work as well.
Yeah, there'll be a little bit more where essentially you're volunteering to help with the doing, not just the governing, although you should try and limit that to the extent possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and if you get good communication throughout that volunteer network, and you can have a large number of people involved and manage those effectively, then you can reduce the amount of work that the individuals have to do.
Yeah, but it's hard.
Whenever
there's a lack of money, everything becomes much, much harder.
Indeed.
It should be simpler, and sometimes it's not because of the lack of money.
Yes, yeah. I guess the same thing's true of a startup board, right?
Yeah.
You're in the same position.
Absolutely. You know, suddenly, you know, in the big companies, you know, it's $1 million issue.
Yes.
Well, a $100 issue can sometimes be meaningful for very, very small startups or you know, at least, you know, $10,000.
Yes.
You have to take things seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next question for you is, how does a board of directors manage significant risks to an entity?
I don't think there's much magic to this. I think you have to kind of spend a lot of time thinking about what your risks are.
Mm-hmm.
Spend a lot of time thinking about the external influences on the company and what those external risks mean and how much you can essentially control or mitigate external risks, because sometimes you just kind of have to accept them.
Yes.
And then in terms of the internal risks, then you know, you need to do good work around identifying them, mitigating them. Quite often boards start with their risk appetite.
Yes.
So they will look at they'll spend some time thinking about what the risks are, and management will have come up with the list.
Mm-hmm.
And then the board management will work together to work out what the risk appetite is around some versus others. So in strategic risks, maybe risks around revenue or whatever, you might take, you know, growth aspirations, you might take more risk. But other areas such as financial controls, you might take less risk,
right?
Because you don't want to run out of money. So yeah, risk appetite is a good place to start. Risk register, where you identify your risk and identify your mitigants to those risks or areas where you can eliminate them or you transfer them, and then after that is monitoring, isn't it?
Yes.
Based on the level of risk.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. So the key thing, of course, is to start by identifying them, and then for each type of risk, understanding what your appetite is. And then, as you say, you can either accept the risk or mitigate or eliminate the risk if you can, and then monitor and keep your eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots and lots of different risk methodologies out there, but keep it simple. The internet gives you the ones which are perfectly sufficient. The Institute of Directors in New Zealand has got a pretty good set up you can follow.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so to take a step back, what actually is the role of a board of directors? What is governance?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I mean, I think, unfortunately, it's deeply rooted in law, you know. It, essentially, when you've got a corporate body, you know, how does it make decisions? Mm-hmm. It's the board of directors that makes decisions and is then held accountable for those decisions. And as a company gets bigger, or an entity, it doesn't have to be a company, then you have to work out a delegation framework to decide who gets to make what decisions at what level, because obviously the board of directors can't make all the decisions.
Sign all the checks.
But
yes.
That's, if you boil it down to what is the point of board of directors, it's to make decisions on behalf of the company, which are in the best interests of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And this is really why we talk about governance a lot around those decisions, and it's really just to make sure that the decisions being taken are in the best interests of the company and not in the best interests of the person making them.
Yes.
That's really where it all came from, isn't it? Particularly when you start to get a separation between employees working in the company, the board of directors, and the shareholders. So if the shareholders and the employees and the governors, if you like, are not the same,
yes,
you need to have a system of rules around who can do what, when, how much.
Yes.
Otherwise, the shareholders don't know what's going on and don't know who to trust,
right,
who to hold accountable.
Absolutely. In the case of a not-for-profit, you're then talking about those that are on the board of directors as opposed to the members. So they're acting on behalf of the members.
Well, they're acting on behalf of the members. So they still want to act in the best interest of the organisation, I imagine.
Yes.
And ergo, indirectly, the best interests of the members as a whole. I mean, that's very high level. And then underneath that, it's like, well, really, where do we spend our time? And there's sort of two areas. One is around the go forward for the business, the upside. You know, what is its strategy? What's its long-term vision? You know, how do we grow is often the question. But often it's just around what does this business look like in the next 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever many years, depending on the time horizon of that business. A perpetual entity, so a perpetual vision looking forward. And then the other sort of side of the ledger is what I call the downside protection. So that's, you know, you lifted your gaze, you looked forward, you looked at the strategy, and now you're going to kind of go back to that governance, risk, compliance, operational environment, and go, and that's around monitoring and oversight, so to make sure that the strategy that you have come up with, and the business plan that you've come up with, and the set of rules that you've come up with as an organisation are being followed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of holding to account piece that boards do with management and the organisation.
It's a nice way to summarise it, to say that you're starting at the high level. What is the purpose of the organisation? What does it aim to achieve? What's its vision? What's its strategic plan? And then once you've got that plan in place, having the right people to implement it and monitoring and overseeing, that everyone's staying within the swim lanes and doing the right things.
I mean, that's the key difference between an advisory board and a real board, isn't it? Advisory boards can make recommendations about the fun stuff, the strategy and the vision and the future, but they're not doing the holding to account piece, you know? They're making recommendations and then they leave. When you're on the board of directors, you make the decision, and it's your job to make sure that it's followed through.
Right. Well, having been a professional director now for a number of years, what's the best piece of advice you've been given?
Yes, I've been given a lot of advice. I think the best piece of advice is just be very, very careful about which entities you align yourself with, because governance is a marriage, it's not dating, it's a commitment. You know, you're making a commitment to those members or those shareholders, those people that you're acting on behalf of. And so if you jump in too quickly and you realise actually it's not what I thought it was, it'll be very difficult for everyone to extract yourself from. And so it's choose carefully, do your due diligence. And there's some really key elements around that, which is make sure that you think the chair is a really good leader.
Yes.
And is going to run the board effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially work closely with the CEO around making sure the organisation itself is run effectively. So, yeah, if you get the wrong chair, it can be difficult to go forward. Yeah, and make sure it's somewhere you can add value, place your strengths. Yeah.
Is there any different advice you would give to some other perhaps young and upcoming director or that was interested in getting into governance? What would you advise?
I think it's I think almost don't do it.
Yes.
The risk to reward ratio around governance is terrible. You don't get paid for the risk you're taking on. And more as regulators flex their muscles and as consumers flex their muscles and as class actions increase, there's more and more liability being cheated home to directors. And I'm all for holding people accountable. I think directors need to be held accountable. But there's a limit to how much you can control things as an individual person on a board. You know, you're a group of people who are there for a point in time, and the entity's got a history and it's got a future, and you're in the chair for a while there. But you can end up taking on an awful lot of personal risk.
Yes,
and blood, sweat, and tears. I'm not just talking about money, but there are some directors who've really gone through the mill over decisions which they probably made
in good faith.
You know, having done the best they could with the information they had at the time.
Yes, yeah. As you suggest, when you're in a business that's 300 to 3,000 or more employees, you can't watch everybody, and that's not your job.
No, that's right.
You're kind of
liable for them. You cannot control everything. You have to trust and verify, but trust the organisation, or else you will grind it to a halt. And so it's not so bad if you're retired. You know, you might be in your 60s and 70s, and if something goes wrong, it's not going to affect every other role you're going to get in the future. But if you take on a board when you're in your 30s and 40s or younger, and bad things happen, that's going to stay with you a very, very long time. So just be very, very careful and think about why you want to do governance and is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I love it. I think it is worth it, obviously. But you have to be very careful about who you align yourself with. You don't just jump at the first opportunity.
That's great advice. Is there any difference between governance as we do it here in New Zealand and governance overseas? Is governance governance, or are there kind of are we an outlier in some way?
Well, I think it's going to be a bit of a legalistic answer. Sorry about that.
No,
but I think New Zealand, because it follows the kind of English common law sort of system of governance, whether that's you're talking politics or the judiciary or whatever, our systems of governance are very closely aligned to systems you'll see in other Commonwealth countries, you know, Australia, Canada, former Commonwealth countries like South Africa, and America and so on. So there's a lot of similarities there, but there's also some quite significant cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, the principles might be almost identical, but sometimes the cultural context or the political context can mean that it actually operates quite differently in practice.
Yes.
So, for example, you know, in New Zealand, there's transparency is really valued. Other countries, transparency might not be valued at all. In fact, transparency might be seen as a risk in itself, and that information needs to be closely held, and so on. And it's the same thing with control. You know, we just assume that having a board of directors with making collective decision-making power is sort of best practice, but that's best practice in the framework within we operate. Other people prefer more of a command and control system. So I can't really speak to all the other frameworks out there, but there's definitely some core principles that follow that are very similar to other Commonwealth countries.
I'm glad you brought it back to a legal conversation, actually, because you alluded to that earlier. And I wanted to ask you, actually, about how that impacted governance in non-Commonwealth jurisdictions. Because, you know, they govern the same way that they govern as well as we do in the Western world. But if it's all legalistic, then, you know, the legal framework is different. So governance would have different roots. But I expect that fundamentally the whole concept of overseeing the entity and helping to drive the industry into its future would be fundamentally the same. But the cultural context, I think, is a great example. I've experienced that in many parts of the world where, you know, cash can be seen in different ways. Yeah. In this part of the world, we like to document everything that happens to money, and we prefer not to see cash ever. But there are some countries that very much operate in cash.
So. Yeah, we all operate quite differently, and I think you've got to keep your mind open and accept other ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, as long as there's a system of rules that have been created, which have been accepted by the organisation, right?
Yes.
It doesn't matter if those systems of rules look completely different from one organisation to the next. As long as there is a clear system of rules, which have been essentially approved by whoever should be approving them, whether it's the members and a not-for-profit or the shareholders and of a company, and then accepted by the governors, the board of directors, whoever. So if you've got a set of rules that have been approved and have been accepted, then they need to be used, they need to be followed, they need to be monitored, they need to check that you're following the rules. You can't just put them in a drawer and forget about them.
Yes.
I actually don't mind if somebody decides to design that set of rules in a way that's completely different to what I'm used to.
No, as long as it's
that's okay, that's their choice. That's right. And if I don't like those systems of rules or whatever, I might choose not to join that organisation or be on that board. But that's my choice. You've got to accept different ways of working. Yeah.
Yes, and then you do want a board that is involved in that strategic level conversation so that the organisation is moving towards some goal, some purpose. All it's doing is managing and setting rules and not necessarily monitoring that those rules are being followed, then it's kind of doing the middle bit, but not the top or the bottom.
Well, I would still say sing it badly, because you know, yes, we all should be strategic and looking forward, but if you have a set of rules and you haven't checked whether you're following them or not, then that's negligent, really. That's poor practice. Negligent, because
that's
people get busy.
Yeah.
People get busy, but you know, it's poor practice.
Yes.
And what we're aiming for governance is good practice,
yes.
Somewhat best practice. You know, I'm happy with good governance and good practice. So if there's a system of rules in place, you need to follow them. Or you need to at least know what they are,
yes.
and decide which ones are absolutely essential to be followed and other ones which are not quite so important. And I think that's something that, you know, lawyers can be quite useful, because a lot of people get on boards and don't realise that actually there is at its core quite a kind of a legal framework.
Yes.
Operating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time, Kirsty. It's been great to catch up with you again. I'll look forward to seeing you on next episode.